Okay, in this area we spoke a dialect and we grew up knowing it to be Geechee.
I mean, we're just recording. We're oral historians. Is that okay? We forgot to ask. Always ask. May we?
Might as well.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, on the coast here, we are known as saltwater Geechee. We speak a little faster than the folks inland who are known as freshwater Geechee, okay? Saltwater moves swiftly, so we speak fast. And saltwater just kind of sits there, so inland folks speak it kind of slowly. In recent years, folks have started calling it gullah. Now, when folks come to the island, they like to hear, you know, the language. And since most of the older folks who died out, you know, they don't speak it anymore, so I thought I would concoct the story of Little Red Riding Hood and what I call Geechee, so folks can hear the flow of the language. Okay?
Okay.
And it goes something like this. One time, way back, way long time ago now, it been a little gal, and that little gal and her mammy, he way back up in the woods, and it been told, great God, it been told, and that little gal mammy, and they call it told. Now, one day, make him a little red thing, trunk with the head chair, trunk with the back ear, and the neck gonna leave the throat. And the people, they'd call the little gal Little Red Riding Hood, because the way that thing from day clean, moon right. Now, one morning, way before day clean, the little gal mammy get up and put on a pot of collard greens and ham hock. And they make a cornbread. And when it gets real cooked, you pack them up in a little basket. And then you get the little gal up and give him in harmony. And when the little gal gets real eat, the mammy tell him, say, look here, your gal mammy is bad off sick. He's sick in the bed. He can't do for himself. I want you to tell me your basket of something to eat. I want you to do for him, yeah? And the little gal tell him, yow them. And when the little gal gets real eat in harmony, you get up and you put in a little red thing, throw him across the head, throw him across the back here, and then they're going to eat the throat. And then you get the basket of something to eat, and you're going down the road. On down the road to the gal mammy house. Now, when you get way far down the road, here come that old big bad wolf. Old big bad wolf to come up to the little gal and he tell him, say, where you going? And the little gal would tell him, I just going to the gal mammy. He bad off sick. He's sick in the bed. He can't do for himself. I'm going to carry him back for something to eat and I go do for him. Now, the old wolf now, you just study your head and you think to yourself. You don't like to eat little children, but you don't like to eat old people too. They take off way down the road, way in front of the little gal, and they come up to the gal mammy house, and knock on the door, bam, bam, bam. And the old gal mammy live in the bed all sick up. And they tell him, who that? And the old wolf outside the door, and I need to make back the little gal. And me, gal mammy, I had to come bring you the basket of something to eat. I had to come do for you. The old gal mammy tell him, come on in here. And the old wolf, and they push the door open, and stick his foot inside the door, and they peep around the door. When the gal mammy look up and see the wolf, jump about the bed and run and lock himself up in the closet. Now, when you jump about the bed, the eyeglass fall off your nose and the nightcap fall off your head. Now, the old wolf may either come on in, either pick up the eyeglass and put on your nose and the nightcap and put on your head, and get in the gal mammy bed and pull the bed clothes up way around the throat. Now, either make like he's a gal mammy. Now, the little gal ain't know what done happened, so he come up to the door and knock. Old wolf in the bed, now either make like the gal mammy. Who that? And the little gal outside the door. It's me, gal mammy. I had to come bring you the basket of something to eat. I had to come do for you. And the old wolf tell him, come on in here. Well, the little gal pushed the door open and stick his foot inside the door. Look, and study your head and think to yourself, say, good God, gal mammy must be bad off sick. You sure look bad. And they walk on to the bed and look. Say, good God, gal mammy, sure have a big yell. And the old wolf tell him, I'd have yelled you good from a big yell. The little gal looks on and say, good God, gal mammy, sure have a big eye. And the old wolf tells him, I'd have seen you good from a big eye. That little gal threw her hand on the hip and he ran back. Said, good God, gal mammy, sure got a big mouth. That old wolf jumped out the bed. I'd have eaten from a big mouth. That little gal dropped that basket of something to eat. And they turned around and take up out the door. Run way down the road. Run far. The old wolf is dead in him. That little gal was screaming. That little gal was hollering. Now, come to the man with the big eye. Now, that man with that big eye, he'd have lay for that wolf a long time. And catch that wolf. Turn that wolf every which way, but he ain't turning loose now. He done put something on that wolf that day. Now, that little gal stay out there watch everything, and when everything over, they go back to the damn man's house and they're down by the closet. And they'd step down and they'd pack the guts at the collard greens and arm off and cornbread, and they'd laugh at the old big bad wolf. They ain't never seen him no more.
Thank you.
nothing. Just go to bed and say your prayers tonight. Yeah. What did you miss your prayer last night? You didn't pray it wrong. Maybe you didn't pray it wrong. Maybe tonight you prayed them away tonight. So they wouldn't bother you. Just let them know that you know that they're there. That's all. You should leave you alone. My brother said one rode him one night and he reached around and couldn't get him off him, so he reached around and he pinched him and when he pinched him, it fell on the floor and he said, phew. And he told Mama the next morning, Mama said, boy, quit lying. My brother could lie out loud anymore. That was his best feeling when he did to it, said Elma. I think that would happen when it would explain away that it kind of went away. It's a part of the culture and history, and, you know, it's there. But we have this thing of, you know, it's in our, what young people say, in your psyche. It's in your brain. It's in your being. And once you explain it away, they tend to disappear. Don't explain it away. Let it be. Leave it alone. Yeah. I always hated the white folks when they came over with that scientist thing. They explained two things away. They explained the hag away and they explained the jack-o'-lantern theory. They explained it away, and after all, nobody's seen it anymore.
Explanation for the jack-o'-lantern.
Well, their explanation was that low-lying area, gas gathered, low-lying area, over wet areas, water and so forth, and it's a natural phenomenon that happens in this gas that forms this glowing ball up above that area. And so they explained it away. And that was it. Nobody has seen a jack-o'-lantern since. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of white people talk about spirits?
No, they like to talk about ghosts.
Yeah.
Black people talk about spirits. The spirit is a whole different being. It's with you all the time. When you're sleeping, when you're awake, sitting around the side of you. And that ghost, the thing you expect to see floating through the air someplace, you know, with a head or without a head, and light and fluffy and whatever. Now, to black people, this is spirit. It's your spirit of your loved ones, your people who have gone before you, that are still with you, and so forth. And even not only spirit, it don't have to be a dead person. It can also be a live person. But so that's there. They don't believe that. So they conjure up the ghost, which is something they can see, you know. Most people, white people especially, they believe in things that they can see, hear, touch, and smell, so they can control it.
Right.
We don't do that. We believe in it unseen, untouchable. You don't have to hear it. You don't have to smell it. You just know it's there. So a whole different thing, and they cannot get into that as we do. They try to get us out of it, though, by giving us all these scientific reason why this is this and this is what and this is what you should believe in and so forth, so that we fall into that trap. We don't already lose a part of ourselves, because then we begin to think like them. I don't think God wants to think like them, so why should we? Well, let them think their way. I'm happy thinking my way. That's it. But I think they try to think like us now. Yeah, so we have this reversal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is so many of the things, the herbs, and
But now one lady, Miss Rosa, always told me, and she told it to one Sunday. We had gay and white services we have every October. Every fourth Sunday in October we have what we call the gay and white service. I think it's now in the 20th year something, and everybody's dressed in white. The church is all decorated in white, you know, and the whole thing. And one lady invited this white lady with her, and she was there, and Ms. Rosa sat by me, and she nudged me. I said, that's nice. She said, you see that white lady up there? I said, see how this is bobbing her head and trying to get into the service? She said, you know, baby, I don't care if they sit right next to you, sit on your lap. Now these days, she said, they sleep with you, they eat with you, they everything. But she said, no, you know, you can still lose them inside your church service. They can sit right by you and still you done lost them. And I ain't thought nothing of it until all the rest of the day I spent the day looking at that white lady. I never thought of it until Ms. Rosa said it, and I'm all the rest of the day I'm looking at that lady going, yeah, she's off keys, you know. she's clapping at the Rhonda, you know, we going in sync, and she go trying to get it right, and she go, you know, she miss it, you know, and even she's the three of her body going the wrong way, and we go, I'm going, yeah, we done lost her completely. She's trying to get in, but then she can't get in, although she's in the church and the service. So I always think what was wrong when I see a white person in my church. That means the same God, but it seems like, you know, there's a part of us that they cannot emulate no matter how they try.
Right.
So let's keep it.
Yeah,
it's ours.
I know.
Every church has an amen corner. Yes.
And I'm an experienced
amen corner person.
Corner.
Okay.
I try not to talk. I try really hard not to ask for just baby questions and talk with people. Do you think that's possible to do
No.
Wait, tell them. Oh, can you say this about time? Sorry. Tell them about your experience of talking with the
Miss one, God, Dr. President Belito Man?
Yes.
Oh, who interviewed me? For the book? Nobody did.
I interviewed you.
Who?
Christina.
Oh, Christina. No,
yeah.
She did a typing.
Yeah, she did
a typing. She did a typing. I did everything longhand because I can't type. I do the 100 peck typing, you know. There's an AOA and the peck. Where is the P, you know? So it takes me forever to do that. So
how did she come?
But Christina had did an article on me for the Georgia Poverty Journal some years before that, and I remembered it, and so I called her and asked her if she, you know, what was she doing, and she's willing to type this book up for me. And so she said, let me get back with you, and she did. And matter of fact, she worked for Georgia Legal Services up in Atlanta, and they were actually getting ready to do some cutbacks, and she was on this list of cutbacks. So she called me later and said, I would love it, because she said, believe it or not, my job was one to one, they're cutting back on. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So she typed it.
Mm-hmm.
She typed it, I edited.
Mm-hmm.
And every time she injects her thought in it, I X it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of relationship we had. It was like, I don't care, it's not your book, not your life. You hire to type it, you type, I edit, and don't put yourself in it.
How long
so she did
it?
About 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about it for 10.
Uh-huh.
So I tell people, I talked it up for 10 and then I actually did it in 2. Yeah. So.
Were you surprised at how well
you did the book? Yeah. As a matter of fact, I didn't even do it for the sake of seeing how many copies it was going to sell. It just I did it because it was a story to be told before everybody died. So, because all my information came from family members and all the people of the community, which was all my family members, they were cousins and stuff anyhow. But, and so I figured I better get this stuff and what I remember and what they have told me and put it down before they all gone. Matter of fact, they all have gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell
about
your experience with
McFeely. Ah, William McFeely. Oh, stop those people.
Mm-hmm. And I think Renee was about this.
The man is an expert on black history, so now that's what he called himself, and other people called himself that too. So they've got lots of reward teaching our history, writing about it. One of his first was on, what's the guy named? Frederick Douglass. And rich people say that we're related to, and I'm still trying to find the connection. I haven't did that yet. He was the first, I remember he called me years ago. Miss Bailey, I said, yes, and he identified himself. He said, I found information that you all, your family is related to Frederick Douglass. I said, you did?
Mm.
I said, show me proof.
Mm.
So when he came down, all he had was the fact that his mother was from Georgia, but that's what all he had. I'm going, there were a lot of runaway slave parents who were from Georgia. I said, that doesn't prove very much, you know, it doesn't sit her in an area that my people happen to be in. or anything, you know, or did he mislead her with the fact of who her slaveholder was in connection to the one that we had over here? So I couldn't find the connection. So it may be there, but he didn't have no more proof than I would have come up with. So I said, I don't think we were kin to the guy. Yeah.
And so that's how your relationship started.
It's actually the one whom you talked to at length. You did some interviews on Sappalo, and then you wrote the book.
Max Seeley, I didn't talk to do his book. Max Seeley did his book from magazine articles and newspaper articles and from the archives and others. I later learned that his students actually did the book as a part of their assignment. Mm-hmm. So they did most of the legwork for it. He came and spent 3 weeks on Sappalo and stayed with the banks. Mm-hmm. And he never visited me in those 3 weeks because he knew I didn't like him. So every day he passed by the bicycle, he looked toward the house and something in the yard, he waved, and I waved back at him. That's about it. No, so we just, no.
I thought there was a story about someone whom you talked to later wrote the book, and there was misinformation.
I don't know. People sometimes come down and take one interview or one sentence and turn it into a whole book and so forth, so. That have happened so much that I can't remember everybody that did or didn't. But we did do Sappalo Voices. And that was a bunch of interviews with all the folks in the community who were 70 years old and older. So we did that one. Yeah. Then we got a cookbook out now, too. So it'll teach you how to do everything from collard greens to fried rats. Look how quiet the room got. I love to see people express it when I say that. It's like, fried rat. Of course. I'm going to ask you a hypothetical question. It may be a real question. If there's no food anywhere, nothing to eat, and all that you can see is a rat, nothing. A little water, but no meat. Nothing to eat, but that rat is sitting there, and you got a club that you can clobber him with. Would you make him dinner, or would you just starve to death? That's right. There you go, girl. He'll be a dinner. Forget it. He'll be dinner. When things get better, I'll forget about him. You know, I'll give, you know, he can go on my fitness after that. But in the meantime, that's the only thing between me and death. He'll be dinner. So I always tell people, they go, never say never. Because you never know what's going to happen in this world and what you're going to have to do before you leave this world. So you would say, I don't like rats. And I may never try to eat one, but reserve something when you say but, you know, because then, you know, you may have to. But it was for medicinal purposes that I tasted it. But I'll let you know firsthand that it is edible. It is edible. I mean, I was a curious child. I mean, they cooked this stuff for my nephew who was a bedwetter. And serve it to him. And so I'm looking at it going, Grandpa, can I have a piece? And he said, yes, so you give me a tiny piece. And I ate it, and it's not bad. So my first and only, but I'm here to attest to you all that I didn't die from it. It was good, and it was edible, and I didn't get sick, but capers kept wetting the bed. So it didn't work. After a while, Grandpa quit setting the traps up to catch, you know, rats for capers because it didn't work. Okay, let's see. By my porch up there, I have lemongrass, I have pennyroyal, I have mint, I have myrtle bush outside, bay leaves outside, Spanish moss hanging from the oak trees. I have a mullein in my backyard. That's just an inkling of stuff that you can brew up and make a tea here and all the stuff.
Like
everything from cramps to for seasoning, insect repellent, it's a various assortment of things. So it's all of the yards.
So are we
going to
be the Capella Book of
Remedies? Yeah, I got them all.
You're going to call us the diver with
put a quiet disclaimer. doctors wouldn't say she tried to kill nobody. Try it at your own risk. You know, anything in moderation is good for you. God said he put everything on earth that man needs to sustain himself.
Right.
But we did not use, we did not keep his word. So we didn't pay attention. So when they start mixing stuff up in the lab and giving it to us, we going, this was miracle medicine. The miracle medicine was little leaves and roots and that kind of stuff, and we just ignore it. Yeah.
Life everlasting.
Life everlasting.
That was something that really stuck out.
There was a guy from Nigeria. He called it in Nigeria. He called it, we call it life everlasting, and he called it the never die plant. So I'm saying to myself, what's the difference between life everlasting and never die? You know. Same. That's what he referred to it as. So he saw it and he said, oh, that's the never die plant. And we called the life everlasting. All right. I don't know. My father drunk it, and he lives to be 2 months shy of 100. So, you know, Uncle Shed drank it all his life, and he was 112.
Wow.
So maybe there's something, you know.
I want some.
The numerical growth here. But then you have to be brave and drink it bare, as Papa would call it, drink it bare feet. That means not visiting our bare feet like this, but I mean, he meant when he said that, you don't put no additives in it.
Mm-hmm.
There was no sugar, no honey, no lemon, no nothing. Mm-hmm. Except some special tonic every now and then, he would put honey inside of it, little gin, and lemon juice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, but other than that, on a day-to-day basis, you drink it bitter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you drink it, you couldn't frown while you're drinking it. Because the medicine is no good. Even your modern medicine you take. They will tell you plain, do not frown while you're taking it. So you go, I don't care how bitter it is, do not frown. And you don't continuously stop while you're drinking. You drink a little bit and you stop there. So you got to drink the whole entire thing right on down for it to do you some good and no frowning. So no matter how bad it tastes, don't frown. It will not work. So she's like, boy, I frown. But life everlasting is not out yet.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't mature until late summer, early fall. So most of your herbal plants, a lot of them is usually late summer and early fall. Sassafras, some people, they still rather we get sassafras when the sap is up, which is now, or when the sap is down, which is in the fall. Right now the sap is up. This is the time to dig. Sassafras I use the whole year. It doesn't matter whether the sap is up or down. It's more potent now because it is up, you know. But so sassafras is out there, and it's a great thing to have around. So, and I'm always showing people what it looks like. Sassafras is the only tree in America, native plant in America, that has three distinct leaves on them. It has one that looks shaped like a mitten, you know, and one looks like a little thumb sticking out. One leaf is oval shaped, and the other one has, you know, like this split in two, like this. And that's it, and that's the only one on one tree. There's three different shapes of leaves. All the other trees have one shape of leaf, and that's it. So you would find a sassafras anywhere. So I said it smelled good. Yes.
How do you learn which herbs and remedies work for this family?
Well, trial and tribulation. Stay away from the tribulation part. But it's just mostly because you will find someone in South Carolina will use the same plant I'm using but for a different reason than I'm using here and vice versa and so forth. So you will find some plants that people use for one thing in another area that said, you don't use it for that, we use it for this. So it depends on the people, what was available, what sometimes have been passed down from Native Americans as well as what. Because when we came over here now, when we came from Africa, we had to look for new plants, a lot of them, because a lot of the plants was not native to, you know, not knowledgeable to us. And we came off those ships and started going to these woods. We didn't recognize a lot of this stuff. So we had to either rely on Native Americans or just rely on what was called Mother Wit and try them out. So you most people, everybody wasn't a natural herbalist. It just took special people to have a special knowledge. It's something that actually, you can feel it in your brain. You can know that exactly that plant right there may help. And somebody else can go and get the complete opposite plant and kill you. You know? So you've got to know it's something that is given to you, and so that you're born with, you can identify, which is which, and that kind of stuff.
Do you know there's enough Native American friends on the island?
They kind of fluctuate on when it was, because a lot of people would think there are no Native Americans even in the state of Georgia, which there is. There's a few of them that are Indians, for instance. So my parents didn't grow up with any on the island. And there were some when the slaves were here. Developers would come, and I hope it didn't contribute anything to them, because even my book, I try to keep them away. But it's sometimes it's just us, you know. We get mad with the white folks, and Lord, you know, I'm the worst one when it comes to getting mad with those folks, you know. Like Ms. Francis would say, I can't stand the ground they walk on, although we walk on the same one. but the thing about it is, it's us. We got to blame us first, before we blame them, because they didn't come and steal it. It's the want that they have. They have this mentality. They always want something that we have. You know, when after Sherman's Seal Order and others, and although they took it back, and one of the orders was that no whites should reside on these islands except in a governing capacity and so forth, it worked for a long time, even though the order was rescinded. A lot of it was rescinded. It worked for a long time because the whites didn't want it. They said, let us have it because it's full of snakes and mosquitoes and gnats and so forth, and they don't want it. So they went further inland. So they didn't stay on these islands. And now they're coming back in droves because it's modern times. I mean, they got air conditioned now. They don't have to worry about getting eaten up by mosquitoes and gnats. You know, close the door, turn on your air, and you still have a piece of island dirt that you're living on. So it's a different scene. So, but then it's us who mess up and let our property go for foolishness or outright sell to some of them. So we the blame. We invite them, we open the door, and we invited them in.
Can you outline for us your battle plan against the invaders?
Oh, well, can you come visit me in prison if I shoot? I mean, those people multiply. They kept coming, you know. You're like, how do you get rid of them? And you always got a few of us in the community who seem to love them to death.
Yeah.
There was one guy, I did get him to sell his property. I was going over on a midday boat, and he just bought a piece of property from another white guy who bought it from this black guy. And he sat by me and introduced himself. And I said, you sure you want to sit by me? Yes, Miss Bailey. So he sat by me, and for 30 minutes when I get to the other side, he heard an air full. A couple months later, I heard someone say he sold it back to the guy he got it from because he didn't want to move the sapling. So he did not. He sold it. He did not come, you know. And I just let him off the bat. I didn't like him. I didn't like any of them. So I told him, I said, there are some of us who is going to tell you in front of your face, they're going to play up to you because you got money and because you're a white man. And then behind your back, they'll call you all kind of name and cuss you out. I said, I'm going to cuss you out to your face.
Uh-huh.
I don't want your money. I don't want anything from you. I just plain don't want you in my community.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you it off the front. So I don't want anything from you. And so you got folks who, you know, play the double side. You know, old Mr. So-and-so and they're skinning and grinning, you know. And then as soon as he walk off, that old white man get on my nerve. I mean, I wish he wasn't in my community. Well, tell him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they like living on this, with this false illusion that everybody likes them.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody likes them, and so, and everybody's going to make them feel welcome, you know, that kind of stuff. And if they feel unwelcome and they know it, they tend not to stay. But you got a few in this community that seems to give them that welcome sign. The majority don't. So you can bet that the majority do not put out a welcome sign. So we don't want them. We have one guy who even joined the church right there. He's a Greek Orthodox, for God's sake. Belonged to this big Greek Orthodox church in Atlanta. I saw the church and his whole family, generation of Belonged. He came and put a membership in the Baptist church here so he could be accepted by the community. Only came that Sunday, never came back. I said, are y'all crazy? I said, y'all, I said, do you know? And he, in that service where he was on, it was, he videotaped the whole thing, took it back to one of his clubs that he belongs to in Atlanta, and played the tape. And some of the other white people that I knew for years who were there actually walked out. They were at the same club and they walked out of it. They said it was disrespectful and disgraceful, and so they actually walked out. And I came back and I told them, I said, y'all quit letting these people in your church because they put $200 on the table. That's crazy. So like my grandmother said, I'd rather pick shit with a ticket than take anything from that upper man.
Wait a minute.
Oh, what? You didn't hear it?
Another day, though.
Well, they got three up here, so.
You got to say it again.
I want to hear it.
Like my grandmother said, you know, I'd rather pick shit with the chicken and take anything from that buffer man. That's right.
Wow.
So now you decipher that. You see, okay. Anybody seen a chicken? Ever seen a chicken free range scratching around the yard? Mm-hmm. You know, he'll make a living. He will feed himself because he scratches it all day long. Mm-hmm. And so that's what grandma meant. Mm-hmm. She'd rather pick shit with the chicken. She will find a way to make a living. She would scratch at a living. She would make a living. She would feed herself, but she would not beg that white man. That's right. That's what buffer means, too. So, I figure y'all got that one. My cousin Annie pronounced it backrub.
Backrub.
Yeah, it's backrub. Yeah, so.
Why do you think the new generation doesn't have that same mindset as your grandmother's?
Some of them do. It depends. Each household is sometimes different, and it depends on what the old adage, who were, you take the people that actually did not grow up around white folks, that their families over here that didn't grow up with white folks, and then their parents might have worked for some of them, but they kept their distance, you know, they never, like you would say, never grit up in their face, never get close to them and had no inkling of getting close to them. They did their job they had to do, accept their paycheck on Friday, and that's it, you know. But then you also had some that tried to get as close as they can, you know, for what reason I can't figure out yet. But I found that these are the ones that figure that the white folks love them to death and tell them everything and feel like they're obligated to do so, you know. And I go to church and I get mad when I hear a name calling church that this guy sent money to church. I'm going, he don't even come. Why is he sending donations to our church? That's their way of trying to assimilate themselves in your community, you know. But, you know, figure black people are very church oriented. So, boy, that's a nice man. He sent a check for $200 or $400 in church. Uh-uh. If you can't bring your body, don't send your money. You know, because all you do is try to buy somebody, change somebody's mind. That's all it is to them, you know. But they will accept that kind of stuff. I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, most people in Stavolo see you as a spokesperson for the island.
Well, they either think I'm mean as heck. You know, spokesperson, one or two, and sometimes they put the two together. I either intimidate them or I intimidate the heck out of the white folks. I don't know which one comes first. I was doing adding up the population one day, and they said, There's more people than that on there. I said, I don't count the white folks. They're not doing that. I never did. I mean, most of them is, they come and go with their scientists. The other ones that's here, they don't get the mail here. They don't vote in this district. If you don't vote in this district, you don't own land on this island. This is the 13th, 12th district of Mackinac County, and you don't get counted as a citizen. So I don't count them. That's right. So they don't let one of them say, I was a scientist over here for 16 years. I said, I don't care. You still don't own nothing. I said, when you get tired or you get transferred, you leave. So I don't count them. So that's it. So they don't like the fact that I don't include them when I'm adding up numbers. Yeah. You don't belong. You don't belong. You're an outsider. I met the West Indies last year, and it was funny. We went through the line, and we went to Provo. And you got into the airport and everything, and they had these lines. And we went through these lines with the security personnel, and you had to show your passport and all those kind of stuff, you know. But there was one sign over there that says, Belongers. So I asked the security personnel, I said, why is the sign over there that says Belongers? He said, that sign is for people who is born and raised over here. They don't have to come through the line you're coming through. They go through that one and go on home. They belong here. So that sign says Belongers. We use the term outsiders. That's right. So, and I'm going, not bad. Not bad at all, So those outside people have been coming in like crazy all over the place, the vacation down there and whatever, and there was the Belongers, and they had to wait, and they grumbled, and they carried on, and the luggage getting lost, and the Belongers were just going on through the line and going on home, without any if ands and buts about it, so, because they belong there. So that was a neat feeling.
Can you talk about
people? Very important. Naming is very important to black people. Sometimes now I have to get a little bit kind of worried, because the name we're naming our kids now, it doesn't. You got a surgeon of people that says, okay, the name that we had before was so-called Christian name that was given by the white person to us, James, John, Mary, Alice, Sue, and so forth, etc. And, then you had the European name, and then you had another segment of names that they used, and most of the names was basically names from London, from around the English area, and then there was names that was from the Italian area. They said French would give their slaves a different set of name from European, folks and stuff. So they all go back and forth, but then whatever they called us, there were some of us who were stubborn enough to keep our given name. Now, when I went to Africa, believe it or not, most Africans have two names, which was surprising. They could be Timothy, but then I asked one of them, I said, do you have another name? And there was an African name that they had also. It was an English-speaking country, so they had Timothy, but then they also had another name. I asked him, I said, why did y'all do that? I said, why don't you use your African name? So to me, it seems like they're taking something away from themselves, by using only the Christian names, because the country was colonized by the British and the Portuguese and so forth. But I think I would just stand over to like my great-great-grandfather, Bilali, and he'd name all of his children African names and so forth. He didn't care what they what they said, and so that's not bad. And but name was important for us for the fact that no matter what the name was, Alice, Sue, Jean, or John, for the fact that we use our names generation after generation to find each other. See, it's hard for you to go back after 1870 and find your great 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 grandparents by a last name. They didn't have one. They were on the plantation roll as Sue, Jean, John, and so forth under this plantation owner, but there was no last name. So when you pick up a record that says your great-great-great-great-grandfather was born in 1745 and his name was John Green, well, he didn't have a last name. He was not John Green unless he was a free slave,
a free black man. He was, he just, his name was just John. And so, but we found out people by our names. You know, if you, your mama name was Alma, well, you're going to look for every Alma there was. And that Alma is going to have sometime a child name after her, or there's going to be a niece name after her. And so that name Alma, instead of you looking for, you're looking for an Alma everywhere. You know, you're looking for a Pompey everywhere. You know, and so you're looking for an Isidore everywhere because that's all you had. And so you kept the name going in the family so you can always find someone. So that first name was important to us. And we also used to name it, I mean, in black families, you almost had a fighting. You had a war sometime in black families over name, girl. People would get mad. You know, if you were pregnant and I was your friend or something and I met your husband, they go, I'm going, when you have, if it's a girl, I want to name Cornelia. Then she would come and said, if it's a girl, I want to name after me. She would come and tell you, if it's a girl, girl, I sure would like you to name that baby after me. Now, hey, you got a limit. You got me, her, and her, and all of us want that name. And now you're going to have to pick one of us, and when that, when they come back after that baby's born, them other two are going to be awful mad at you. Real mad. And sometimes they stay mad for a long time. I thought me and her was good friends, and she went and named that child after that. She wasn't friend as long as I was. And so they would actually get mad. So they had these, and they would actually name the child, you know, usually on the third day. And actually, when I grew up, they actually did take me. You know, you saw the movie Roots where they went outside, you know, and what the hell the baby. They actually, the parents would carry, the mother wasn't allowed out of the bed. So mostly it was the grandparents or somebody. Or the father would take the baby outside, and they would hold it up to the world and introduce it to the world and call him by his name. That's right. And from then on, every place that baby goes, you have to call him by his or her name before you leave a building and before you return. Always. Because if you don't, you're leaving his spirit. So when you leave, you said, I don't care if it's 2 days old. Come on, Mary, let's go. When Mary done going to visit her for 3 or 4 hours when you're ready to leave, you said, come on, Mary, we're going home. So you take her spirit back. Mm-hmm. That's right. People do that. Yeah. It's to keep a baby happy and keep him from being fussy. Yeah.
Could you tell us more about Mother
Wit? Oh, you mean there's people that still have that?
What does Mother Wit mean back?
People now call that intuition, but Mother Wit was basically, the short term was for common sense. You know, everybody didn't have CS, you know, you got a lot of people today that doesn't have CF, and especially when it comes to women, you have to have Mother Wit. Mother Wit went a long way. And Mother Wit, you think the word Mother Wit, you think woman. But that also applied to men as well. That's right. So you got to have common sense with a lot of stuff. And so people now use the term a gut feeling, you know, and so forth, whatsoever. My heart tells me I should have did that, I should have said it, and I didn't do it, and what was right and what's wrong. And so that's always a part of Mother Wit. We don't listen to those things no more. You know, we go with the percentage. According to the percentage, it says that. You know, then a couple of days later, they say, you know, I should have listened to myself when I said that. That's right. We don't listen to ourselves at all anymore. Young people listen to ourselves. We are the best person to talk to. Get up in the morning and get in front of the mirror and talk to yourself in the mirror. I used to do that all the time. I used to get in the mirror and say, when you're in the mirror, there's two of you. And the one standing there and the other one looking back at you. You can argue all you want. So both of you are arguing with each other. That's right. One is saying, yes, you should do it. And the other one said, no, you don't. So I do it. I remember when I turned 50, I looked in the mirror. I got up that morning, got getting ready to go to work for the state of Georgia. And I said, girl, you're 50 years old today. Happy birthday. Now, I said, now you have lived half a century. You have earned the right to do what you want to do. Say what you want to say, go where you want to go, and let no man stand in your way. Obey the laws of God and man, the law that you can live with, and for
forget the rest. Right? You go for it. If you feel it is right, go for it. Y'all ain't 50 yet, but you know. You're going to reach there. You'll get there. Yes.
At the doctor that you came in. Yeah.
I was wondering, I haven't had a chance to read the article yet, but I was wondering how you felt about the way coastal living represented
Sierra. They did okay. I mean, they were just doing an article. Heck, they didn't do anything specifically for the audience.
Right.
And this was the article they was written. And it's a lot of people came to stop because of the article. And so, but.
If I didn't know anything about Sapelo and I read that, or I saw that,
well, they didn't go into, yeah. And you were like, that's another place.
I would have, yeah.
Yeah, because they didn't go into anything specific at all to make you want to come. That molds the touristy people, and so people like yourself would ignore that. Just the white people would use that to come for a vacation, come to, you know, go to the beach or something, and you will be looking for something deeper than they're looking for. So they like the superficial stuff. You know, you can put a one-line ad out and say, come to Sapelo, beautiful beach, and I'll be here. And you're going, come to Sapelo, beautiful beach. I can go to a beautiful beach on Deco or Hawaii or any place else, because you want more of a description than they do. So it doesn't take much for them to grab a hold of something. So they don't go, most of the articles don't go into too much. Yeah. So it was just something that they were doing in these areas as they were coming through. Yeah. St. Simon, they did one on St. Simon as well and up and down the coast. Yeah. Any other questions? In the Bible? God, there's a lot of them. besides the 23rd Psalm. my grandfather, this is the one grandpa always told us, you know, and Lord, I can't even remember where it came from, what he said, with God, all things are possible. And see, why I remember that one was because grandpa used to get this little book every month, and he would read it, and the first thing on the back of it, it says, with God, all things are possible. I can't remember what the other name of it was. And he would wear around him, see, we all have a Muslim background. And so I didn't, when I was a child, I didn't know none of that stuff. But then Papa would wear, my father and Grandpa had around their waist, they call it around the waist, you know, it's called around your middle nine, whatever. But they would have this string around there, and there was a little pouch, little flat pouch that was sewed and run through that. And it would always, they would take it off for bath time to put it back on, or if it got too dirty or so, I remember once that Papa took it off and tell Mama, the sack is getting worn out and too dirty. Make me another. I remember Mama stitching a tiny little sack, putting a new ribbon through it, cord through it, and put that full piece of paper back in it. But I never knew what was on that full piece of paper. And so I remember Grandpa, after Grandpa died, Grandpa was at Mama's house. So I looked, I opened it, and it says the small. All it says in there, that God, all things are possible. And he wore it around under his clothes all his life. Yeah. And so, and Papa had one also. That's all it says. Yeah.
Do you think people are religious today in a way that they're not religious?
Nah. Nah. 15 minutes of church and you're ready to go home. You know, preacher talked too long. I know. And these days, you know, religion back then was taken strictly by faith and what the minister told you, because you believed me. Because when we was growing up, most of the people couldn't read and write. And then you were taught and never questioned whatsoever the minister says. That was it, you know, whether you could read or write. These days, you question everything that comes out of the minister's mouth. He says something, you're back there going, no, that's wrong. That's not right. You're saying that wrong. And he said, man, I know he ain't talking. I know he's not up in that pulpit saying that. When I know he got him a girlfriend and got his wife sitting up here. I know he ain't saying that. So you're questioning everything now. So it's different now. You don't have that. You don't believe blindly.
anymore like we used to. We used to believe blindly. Whatever your teacher said at school and whatever the minister said on Sunday, that was it. You didn't question anything. You didn't question your elders at home. You didn't question nobody. That was a word that was not in kids' vocabulary. You didn't question nobody. They say it, that was it. And if you doubt it, you keep it to yourself. You know what's good for you. And now it's a different thing. So people question everything. People can now read for themselves. They can, like my father would say, they can now decipher it for themselves. So they don't need a man of the cloth behind a pulpit explaining to the Bible what it is, because they themselves now can read it and put their own spin or their own interpretation to whatever he's saying. So it's a little different now. It's a little different because when the minister now says, open your Bible and turn to 2 Samuel and so forth, chapter 4, 5th verse, you know, you're reading it, and he's explaining it one way, and you're reading it going, nah, I believe it goes this way and not that way and so forth. So sometimes I think if the minister wants you to believe what he's saying, he shouldn't tell you open your Bible and look at his chapter, because if you have any inkling of understanding, you're going to sometimes put your own spin on that. And so there you go, you're conflicting what you read, what he's saying, and you're conflicting what you're saying in the pulpit and dung and here, what you're reading, sitting in your pew, and you're going, nah, I don't believe it goes that way. So that makes it a bit difficult. I think people still believe in God the same, but they just have to, now they're just figuring a lot of things out, you know, taking their own course on how to get from point A to point B themselves. Yeah.
What do you think is the major challenge facing black people?
Trying to be white.
Oh, I agree.
I know. We try too hard because we, first of all, we don't want, we go around saying we accept who we are. I like being black, and black is beautiful, and black is powerful. I like being black. And at the same time, the white man tell you, say, I can hire you tomorrow, but you got to take these dreads out of your hair, or you can't wear these braids. You go home and head for the nearest hairdresser and take it out instead of go find another job. Tell a man what he can do with his job, and in a very polite way, you know, because they're still not going to like you no better whether your hair is straight or whether your hair is kinky. They're still going to look at you the same, you know. So we just got to stand up for more things now that we have. Then we have gotten slack where after they all the uproar and all the trouble and all the murder and all the everything else and the beatings and the jailings and so forth and the rules and non-rules of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, we seem to have gotten too passive. So we don't fight for anything anymore. I told a white guy once, he said, everybody seems to be getting along. I said, man, you just don't know it. I said, you know, if we have another civil rights uprising like we did back then, I said, these young people today is not going to go for the nonviolent thing. I said, they're going to have Uzis and AK-7s and so forth. I said, there's going to be a whole lot of body laying down the streets. So now if y'all think y'all going to have another Martin Luther King march, I said, y'all can forget it. Well, he didn't know what to say. I said, it's going to be a different one. I said, I hate to think of it being that way, but if it happens, it's going to be totally different from the ones of the 70s, you know. I went to a Ku Klux Klan rally in Darien. Went over on the boat, my husband and I went over, and they came down to Darien, Main Street Darien, in one end of the town. We were on the other end by the courthouse, and there were literally thousands of blacks down there. And I think half of those blacks was armed. They had secret signals and everything that the police.
When
was that? It was in the they came down. It was in the 70s.
Really?
Yeah, and even I was armed.
And you were armed?
Of course I was. And I mean, looking here, I was raised in the country. Now I know how to shoot my stuff. I know the truth was up. I told a white guy he was speeding by here one day, and I said, I followed him down to the dock. I said, let me tell you one thing. I said, it's a privilege for you to be driving through my community. I said, there's but one public road in this community. All the rest of the road are private roads. And I said, so when you bring your butt through my community with that kind of speed, and I said, I got grandkids riding around on their bicycle, and I said, if you so much as come that close to one of them, I said, look up, Buster, because I got a 410 that I know how to shoot well. I said, when I aim that 410 at your vehicle, I said, God help, where you going to land at, because I will shoot you. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. If he passed by, he come out with a slow speed after that. Don't be playing that junk around me. And so, but, you know, we shouldn't have to get that drastic, but anything anymore, you know, after the Civil Rights Act been passed and everything, we shouldn't be struggling for nothing. We shouldn't be using some of the words that we still use in these speeches and so forth. And we should never be singing, we shall overcome anymore. You know, we should have already overcame. You know, we shouldn't have to worry about, I got my diploma in hand and everything, and this guy won't hire me and that kind of stuff. We shouldn't have to worry about any of that stuff anymore. All that stuff, when they signed it and said this was it, it should have been finished that day. We should have had equal everything. You know, equal housing, equal school, equal tax bases, equal everything we should have had. You know, there shouldn't be no me, us, and them. But we still have that, you know, and it's turbulent. We still going around, you know, with ministers preaching and not preaching the truth. And, you know, I just sometimes wish that they'd get up and poof and get all fired up and say, okay, y'all, let's do something about this because it's not right. You know, I'm a person that love do conquer all, but I also believe in God, so he helped those who help themselves. That's right. So if you go out there and start something, and if you're doing it for the right reason, he'll back you up. But seems like we don't want to start anything anymore. We just want to say, well, we'll take it to court because they know they're wrong, and so the court will, you know, these days, even I don't, sometimes the court is not on our side too much really. You know, we slowly sliding backwards. And once we got the civil rights thing going and we got the right to get on the bus, you know, and we got the right to go to any school we want to, live in any neighborhood we want to and whatever, we got so happy and so complacent we forgot everything. And the white man passed by us. Now, we sit on the front of the bus just looking at our long nails and talking our thing on. You know, they look at us and, excuse me, go sit on the back of the bus. And we want to turn around and look. Do you know while we're sitting on the front enjoying that privilege, they're in the back of the bus plotting and planning.